You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, November 26, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to all of our longtime listeners for understanding yesterday. There was, of course, the major protests in 170 cities across the country. Portland, Oregon was one of them, protesting the reaction to the decision in Ferguson not to indict Officer Darren Wilson for the shooting death of Mike Brown, the unarmed black teenager in Ferguson, Missouri. Today, we're going to be concentrating on that story in many different angles from our view here in the cannabis community. For those of us listeners and viewers out there who are of the pale complexion, like myself, we still have a lot of learning and a lot of understanding to go. But I do believe, as cannabis consumers, we have a little better clue than a lot of people when it comes to police brutality, police lying, and a system that is rigged against us. So we're going to be concentrating on that from our perspective as the cannabis community on today's show. So among the things we'll be talking about today, in behind the headlines, like I said, I was out at the protests last night from about 4 o'clock till about 9 o'clock at night, both the official protest and the unofficial, more anarchic protest. We'll tell you all about that in behind the headlines, and I give you my perspective on how the Portland Police Bureau actually kept its cool and could teach the Ferguson Police Department a few lessons or two. All right. Also on the show, we're going to get into drug war data mining, taking a look at the racial disparity in marijuana enforcement, which to me is just a symptom of the larger problem. But we're also going to talk about how illegal marijuana and the cops' ability to use that as a tool to get around constitutional rights further exacerbates the problems that black Americans already face in dealing with the police. So stay tuned for that in drug war data mining. At 1:30, we're going to get into our cannabis community chat. I'm going to take a look at the legal side of things and analyze Bob McCulloch's Kangaroo Court, the prosecutor there in Missouri who completely punted on this entire issue, and show you how in regular situations, when we're talking about someone getting busted for drugs or something like that, we wouldn't get nearly that good of a response from a grand jury as did McCulloch in this situation. And then at the end of the show, time for a radical rant. I'm going to talk about Darren Wilson, the latest cop to testalie. That's right, testalying, the long understood phenomenon where police officers are coached by other police officers on how to frame and state their case in order to make the best possible appearance on the witness stand. Of course, Darren Wilson won't have to take any witness stand, and we'll talk more about that as well. But it isn't all about Ferguson today. We do have our 420 radio news, and in the news today, USA Today has exposed some inaccuracies going on with the product labeling in Colorado for marijuana products. We've got three states looking at marijuana reform. Virginia is looking at decriminalization. Georgia is looking at whole plant medical marijuana and marijuana legalization, and New Mexico's talking about whether or not it should get on board the legalization train. Also in the news, we've got an interesting rejection of a $14,000 gift in Washington State, and up in the northwest corner of Oregon where Cannabis Carry lives, you won't believe what the city council just approved to put next to a medical marijuana dispensary. All that's coming up on the Russ Belville Show.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with our Shoutcast stream for all internet-enabled media players. Go to rad-r.us/420shout or just click the Shoutcast icon below the live radio feed at 420.
Hey, what's up? This is Killer Mike, one half of Run the Jewels, and I'm telling you, November 23rd through 27th, you need to be at Cannabis Cup. I did it last year, and I got so high, I can tell you what color Jesus' furniture is. I got so high, I kissed the sky twice. I got so much enlightenment, I know Buddha's last name. Do you feel what I'm telling you right now? The people are great. You don't have to search or call your sketch-ass dealer who won't call you back. You don't have to go lurking through the hood to find good smoke. You need to get out of the country. You've been sitting on your block too long smoking weed. Get out and have an adventure. See you at Cannabis Cup, November 23rd and 27th. Yeah.
Cannabis Cure TV with Greg DeHote from Sussex, England. Replaying Thursdays at 12 Pacific on 420radio.org.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, November 26, 2014. USA Today purchased nearly $500 worth of marijuana and edibles in Colorado and then had it independently tested to check for potency and accuracy in labeling. The samples were tested by an independent lab because the law prohibits state-certified marijuana labs from testing for anyone but the licensed marijuana industry. The results revealed wide variation in the strength of the marijuana, even when it was sold under the same name. For instance, three samples of what was sold as Blue Dream, a popular strain known to give a euphoric high, tested at 13.54%, 13.63%, and 18.73% THC. The testing also revealed wide variation in the marijuana-infused edibles. Most of them were weaker than advertised on the label. One product claimed 50 milligrams of THC, but only contained 19.22 milligrams, the testing showed. Another product, a chocolate bar, claimed to contain 80 milligrams, but contained only half that. As more states and governments pass laws to decriminalize or legalize pot, the Commonwealth of Virginia is now the next state getting ready to tackle weed. A Virginia state senator will bring his marijuana decriminalization bill to Richmond this January. Quote, "This is not going to legalize marijuana. It is going to make it no longer have a criminal penalty," end quote, said Senator Adam Eben, a 30th District Virginia Democrat. He says too many African Americans are going to jail and too much money is being spent. Quote, "We are spending $67 million of taxpayer funds to enforce marijuana prohibition," end quote, said Senator Eben. Under the current law, a first offense will cost someone $500 and 30 days in jail. Senator Eben's bill would reduce the fine to $100 and would only be a civil offense, like a parking ticket. A Metro Atlanta lawmaker wants to put at least the conversation, if not the reality, of legalized marijuana in Georgia on the table. Democratic State Senator Kurt Thompson introduced two bills. One allows for the sale of full plant medical marijuana for people with certain illnesses. The second would allow regulated retail stores to sell marijuana to adults. Thompson would tax the drug and earmark the money for education and transportation projects. Thompson's bills would be much more extensive than the plan defeated in the last legislative session that would have allowed the use of cannabis oil for medical reasons. Thompson said, quote, "We are the 10th largest state, and we ought to have a voice and be talking about this, and we ought to be getting folks involved," end quote. The conversation about whether New Mexico should join other Western states in legalizing marijuana is cranking up as state lawmakers prepare for the 2015 legislative session. Representative Bill McCamley, a Democrat from southern New Mexico, took his case for legalization to fellow lawmakers Tuesday during the meeting of the Interim Health and Human Services Committee. McCamley has yet to craft the legislation, but he's looking at Oregon as a model. Governor Susana Martinez has been an outspoken critic of decriminalizing marijuana, and control of the State House of Representatives swinging to Republicans will likely make a challenge in getting the legislation passed. School officials Monday flatly turned down a $14,000 donation from a local marijuana farmer, taking a strong stand against youth marijuana use. Quote, "We're not taking it. End of story," end quote, said Ray Tolcatcher, Prosser School District Superintendent. The donor, Randy Williams, now is looking for another local recipient. Quote, "I never thought it'd be a problem to give money away," end quote, said the owner of Fireweed Farms, a marijuana producer north of this city of 5800. Williams' next choice is the Prosser branch of the Boys and Girls Club. The youth nonprofit will evaluate internally, said Brian Ace, executive director of the Boys and Girls Clubs of Benton and Franklin Counties. Next in line would be the Veterans for Foreign Wars, Williams said. While some California cities reject marijuana dispensaries near anything child-related, the Oregon city of Astoria just approved a daycare next door to a dispensary. After a litany of public testimony in support of the request, the Astoria Planning Commission approved a plan to expand Sea of Dreams Childcare into a commercial storefront next to The Pharmacy, a medical marijuana dispensary. City planner Rosemary Johnson said that while dispensaries must be at least 1,000 feet from schools, there's no regulation regarding their proximity to childcare facilities. Staff recommended approving the request. This has been your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, November 26, 2014. I'm Russ Belville. You can get 420 Radio on the go with the TuneIn Radio app for all mobile platforms. Go to rad-r.us/420TuneIn. Or just click the TuneIn Radio icon below the live radio feed on...
Salut mes amis, je m'appelle Marie-Jeanne et je vous invite à joignez-vous à l'équipe de High Times afin de célébrer la meilleure marijuana du monde lors de la 27e Coupe annuelle du cannabis à Amsterdam du 23 au 27 novembre prochain. Pendant 5 jours, les membres du jury pourront participer à des séminaires, découvrir de nouveaux produits et voter pour leur variété de cannabis préférée retrouvée dans les meilleurs cafés de la vie. Les membres du jury auront aussi la chance de voir et d'entendre Action Bronson, Revolution et d'autres formations lors de la concert annuel de la Coupe. De plus, jeudi le 27 novembre, ne manquez pas la remise du prix du meilleur cannabis au monde par l'équipe de High Times. Découvrez le plaisir de la marijuana en toute liberté. Venez participer avec High Times à la Coupe du cannabis à Amsterdam. À bientôt!
NORMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks are far less than those posed by legal drugs. All right, welcome back, everyone. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And of course, the headline everyone is talking about today is the decision not to indict Officer Darren Wilson in Ferguson, Missouri, for the killing of unarmed black teen Michael Brown. And this has led to a firestorm across the country, over 170 cities in protest last night. And Portland, Oregon was one of them. I went out to the protest last night. As you know, if you tuned in yesterday, I was on the bus and then making my way downtown. And sorry about the bus ride video. The way I have things set up here, I can't control the studio when I'm outside the studio. So I have to start the thing and then go. Maybe someday I'll have an assistant again where they can control things from the studio. But until then, got to make do with what I got. And what I found at the protest was I spoke to Jefferson Smith today on X-Ray FM, and I told him it reignited my faith in democracy in this country, because I was there amongst maybe 2,000, 3,000 people that were in the street in front of the Justice Center. And for about an hour, from about 4 to 5, we listened to various speakers, most from the faith communities, other people from various youth and minority outreach kind of groups, all talking to the need. For me, I think the best speaker was the white guy from the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans Against the War, who gave a passionate speech about the racist system in which we live. And that, I think, is something that maybe some people are having trouble, especially some white people are having trouble addressing right now, is the fact that we live in a racist system. I mean, just it's written into our Constitution. I mean, we considered black people 3/5 of a person just for counting them. Right. And just because we have a black president doesn't mean that we're done. There's still so much left to do. But I'll get to that later. I want to talk about the Portland situation, because after the speakers were done, about a third of the crowd stayed and started coalescing around a couple of young black men who were had bullhorns and were kind of organizing the crowd and talking about continuing the march, continuing the protest, and in their words, quote, taking the streets. Now, within this crowd, there were anarchist agitator types. Okay, Portland's got, if you saw the Occupy Wall Street stuff and all that, Portland's got a pretty strong streak of these Guy Fawkes mask wearing, fuck the system, tear it all down, destroy capitalism, anarchy types, right? I imagine every American city has them. Largely white, but I'll attribute that to the fact that Portland, Oregon is the whitest city in North America, statistically speaking. So, but there were a few black kids too, young black people that were, young black men who were a little agitated and ready to start some shit. You could feel that tension that was there. But the young black men that were organizing the march and a lot of the people in the crowd tamped that shit down immediately. It was amazing to me. The guy, there was one guy I remember in the middle of the crowd, he was shouting, "Oh, we could come here and talk about Dr. King every month if we want to. It's not going to change anything until we destroy the system," or whatever crap he was talking. But it was along those lines. And people were just basically either ignoring him or saying, "That's not what we're about. This is for Mike Brown. This is for Mike Brown." I was really proud of people in that crowd, because there are certainly enough angry young people in that crowd that something really bad could have started happening. But generally speaking, things were cool. The protest was held there at the Justice Center. Cops were out. There were a few in riot gear, but not mass phalanxes and tons of armored vehicles and all that stuff that we've seen in Ferguson. There were cops on horses. There were cops on bikes. And the cops on the bikes and a few other of the walking around patrol cops that were monitoring the situation, regular uniform. So it was nice to not have this super strong presence put right in front of our faces. Because I have a feeling if they'd have lined up riot cops right in front of people's faces at that point, that could have been the spark that has set things off. But Portland police held back, let people have their First Amendment rights. Then we started marching. The about a third of us started marching. We ended up taking over some intersections, some major intersections in the bus lanes and the MACs, and stopping all the traffic and hands up, don't shoot, and so forth, and chanting. Where things really got heated is we got to one on-ramp that would have led us on to the freeways. And the cops did line up their riot gear and their bike lines and their horses to stop us from getting on the freeways. That just led the protesters to go around them and over the Burnside Bridge. We completely took over the Burnside Bridge. Took another couple of intersections, Burnside and MLK, Burnside and Grand. Started marching up Grand and then back down Stark until we got underneath the Markham Bridge in this kind of grassy area that also had not like a freeway access, but it was just the concrete barriers. And sure enough, some of the folks started leaping the concrete barriers and getting out onto Interstate 5. And this led the cops into action. The horse cops and the bike cops and the riot cops getting people off the freeways. But once we were off the freeways, back into a place where we could protest, they pretty much kept hands off. We then moved up the stairways and onto the Morrison Bridge, crossed the Morrison Bridge, made our way downtown again, took a left and ended up at Providence Park. That was another spot where they set up some riot cops, could have gotten tense. They threatened to use chemical weapons, but they eventually backed off and all were safe.
You know, there are times where I've fallen off the wagon.
And President Obama, my look at you and your reaction to Ferguson, you know, it just seems like sometimes he's got too much of a lid on it, you know? Like, he knows what it's like to be a young black man, he knows what it's like to be a pot smoker, but the racist system that he is in charge of restrains him from truly speaking out. We'll talk more about this coming up after this.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the Ustream video app for Android and iPhone. Go to rad-r.us/420Ustream or just click the Ustream app icon for Android or iPhone below the live radio feed at 420radio.org.
Hey Tokers and Tokettes, Radical Russ here for the Canador, a practical solution to keep herbs from drying. The Canador is the perfect airtight storage system for your fine herbs. From the half-inch thick walnut and cherry wood construction, clear-top perforated jars for storage, and the humidity bead system that keeps your herbs at a perfect 65% relative humidity. I keep all my herbs in the Canador, and you should too. Check out Canador.com for more information.
Drug Truth Network Cultural Baggage with Dean Becker from Houston, Texas. Replaying Wednesdays at 11 Pacific on 420radio.org.
Get .buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz.
Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome back, everyone. 22 after the hour, and in the data mine today, we're taking a look at a report from the American Civil Liberties Union entitled The War on Marijuana in Black and White. And this does touch a little bit on the events of Ferguson, Missouri. As you'll recall from the testimony, if you haven't seen the testimony of Darren Wilson to the grand jury, I encourage reading it. In his testimony, he said one of the things he noticed about Michael Brown was his yellow socks with marijuana leaves all over them. And of course, there's also the report that there had been a robbery at the convenience store of some cigarillos, you know, the kind of little cigars that are used to make blunts, right? But the problem is, Darren Wilson's testimony said they were aware of a black man in a black shirt. Michael Brown was not wearing a black shirt. But I think in Wilson's mind, he puts two and two together and starts to say, ah, pot leaves on the socks, walking in the middle of the road, couple of black kids, and decides that he wants to take a look. And this action is so common in America that we can show you the statistics of how much more likely a black kid walking in the street is going to get hassled, and oftentimes over marijuana, than a white kid in the same circumstances. This is the national racial disparity in arrest rates for marijuana possession. And we mean arrest rates. This is per 100,000 people. 716 is the black arrest rate. 192 is the white arrest rate. So all other things being equal, a black person's about four times more likely to have to deal with law enforcement when it comes to marijuana possession. Now, other data on that show us, this is the arrest rates for possession by race. Notice those pink bars. The pink bars are white folks, the white arrest rate from 2001 to 2010. Hasn't really changed. It's about 200 per 100,000. But that black arrest rate has gone up from about 520 to over 700 by 2007 and remains over 700 in 2008, 2009, and 2010. Did black people start smoking more marijuana? No. Did white people continue smoking the same amount of marijuana? Yes. And yet, the black arrest rate increases by almost a factor of 50%. What could be behind that, if not racism? We see this racial disparity in various places. In Iowa, the disparity is 8.34 times more likely to be arrested for marijuana than the national average. Washington, D.C., 8 times more likely. Now, most of these states listed, Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, you would think as states that, they're not so black, let's just say, right? Your Nebraskas and so forth. But even states like New York, which no one can say doesn't have a substantial number of black folks, 4.5 times more likely to be arrested. The arrest rates for marijuana by region show us that in the Northeast and Midwest, we have the greatest black arrest rates. The South and then the West are lower. But again, look at those pink bars. Doesn't matter what part of the country you're in, if you're white, you got the same likelihood of getting arrested for weed. But if you're a black person in the Midwest, you're more than twice as likely to get arrested for weed than if you're living out West. How can you not look at that and not see systemic racism based on the different sizes of the counties? This is how many different counties and how much more likely people are to be arrested if they're black. Now, there are a couple there where they're less likely to be arrested if they're black. But for the most part, it's around 3 to 4 times. And even some counties where blacks are 10 times more likely to be arrested for marijuana. The states with the highest black arrest rates for marijuana possession include Nebraska, Illinois, D.C., Iowa, Wisconsin, Nevada, Wyoming, New York, South Dakota, and Florida. And again, we're talking arrest rates per 100,000 in Nebraska, 1,689. There's a 1.6%. They don't even have to talk about per 100,000 at this point. And they got a list for every state that you can go through here to see what the difference is. And it's an amazing report from the American Civil Liberties Union. This is the counties with the highest black arrest rates for marijuana possession. And again, much greater than the white arrest rates.
420 Radio is 24-hour marijuana legalization radio. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web. Are you a hypocrite? If you live a closeted cannabis lifestyle, you are. Read about 7 people living a closeted cannabis lifestyle who are on the verge of coming out in The Hypocrites by Mara K. Eaton. Available at areyouahypocrite.net. You can purchase the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, also available on iTunes. Check out Mara K. Eaton on Facebook as well. Learn more at areyouahypocrite.net. The cannabis community is a diverse set of people from all walks of life, conservative and liberal, black and white, straight and gay, rich and poor, and everyone in between. Learn more about the people we are freeing from adult marijuana prohibition in our cannabis community chat.
Welcome back, everyone. Half past, and today we're going to talk about the grand jury proceeding in Ferguson, Missouri, headed up by Prosecutor Bob McCulloch. And what a sham travesty of justice this exactly turned out to be. I don't know if you stayed up and watched Prosecutor McCullough make his announcement around 8:20 p.m. I guess that was Pacific time, Central time, 8:20 Central time. But what I thought at that moment is being echoed by many legal analysts all across this country. And that was that Bob McCulloch seemed more like a defense attorney than a prosecuting attorney. Bob McCulloch seemed more like the guy who had Darren Wilson as his client, not Mike Brown and his family as his client. Now, this outcome, as it was, you know, all Monday was being prepared to be announced, I told everyone I knew there was no chance in hell there was going to be an indictment. No chance in hell. Now, also, I'll tell you how I believe this would have gone down. Had there been an indictment and Darren Wilson would have had to stand trial, I think he'd have been exonerated. I think he'd have been acquitted, whether rightfully or not. I think he'd have probably gotten away with it. But the indignity of not even having a trial to determine this is the true sham of justice that took place on Monday. Lisa Bloom is a analyst for NBC and an attorney, and she said, quote, "I suspected that he wasn't cross-examined. Instead, he was just allowed to talk in a narrative and tell a story. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. The prosecutors were treating Wilson like he was their witness, helping them make their case against the accused, Michael Brown. They were not treating him like a suspect or a defendant or even a witness for the other side. They were treating him like one of their own," which of course is exactly what he was. And that is the problem. Going into this, if you're not aware of this, Prosecutor Bob McCulloch comes from a family of cops. His whole family is cops. His dad was a cop. Grandpa was a cop. Everybody was a cop. McCulloch became a prosecutor because there was some reason he couldn't become a cop. He said it was the next best thing. And most tellingly, McCulloch's dad, the cop, was killed on a call in the 60s by a black man. Now, I'm not saying that means McCulloch couldn't have done a decent job. I'm saying that calls out for him to recuse himself in this situation. And people did. They called on him to recuse himself. They called on Governor Nixon to appoint a special prosecutor. And both of them held the line and said, no, this will be just fine. And from the beginning, this was all about setting up a situation in the grand jury to get Darren Wilson off the hook. Anybody here who's ever been through a grand jury proceeding, anyone listening who's ever had to deal with that, can tell you what a kangaroo court this turned out to be. Now, what the grand jury has generally been for, just legal 101 here, right? A prosecutor is the lawyer for the state. His gig is to make sure the state prosecutes crimes that can't be prosecuted or brought by another party. So in this case, a dead man, Michael Brown. So Bob McCulloch's job at that point is to prosecute. His job is to, hey, we've got a killing here. We need to take this to court and solve this. Now, most times people are killed. That's pretty easy to do. There's a death. That's a murder or could be a murder or a manslaughter. And that's one of the worst crimes that we prosecute. So you'd think, hey, we want to get those guys. But we don't let prosecutors always just bring every old case to trial. For one, it might clog up the justice system. And for two, there might be an overzealous prosecutor out there. There might be a prosecutor who just has a vendetta, wants to go after someone, has a hunch, but doesn't really have a case. And so that's why we have this grand jury thing. The grand jury thing is so that we can put, the prosecutor can say, hey, here's my case. I got this guy. I think he committed a crime. Here's the evidence I have that shows probable cause that he committed this crime. That should be enough for us to go take this to trial. Understand that the standard of proof we're talking about in a grand jury proceeding is probable cause. In a trial, it's beyond reasonable doubt. And that's why I say, had this gone to trial, it's likely, in my mind, that Wilson would have been exonerated because there's some reasonable doubt. But there's certainly probable cause. Probable cause is the hurdle a cop needs to clear to search your car for weed on the side of the road. Cops manufacture probable cause out of thin air. They'll claim they smelled weed just because they saw your long hair or your tattoos or your Pink Floyd bumper sticker or something. Or you're driving a VW bus. Or in that one case we covered the other day, you've got Frisbee disc golf stuff in your car. Cops manufacture probable cause all the time. Probable cause is a low hurdle to clear. But in this situation, the grand jury wasn't used as a tool to affirm that a probable cause existed to prosecute Darren Wilson. It was used to establish enough doubt to exonerate him. See, when you have a grand jury proceeding, one of the things that you don't do is allow the suspect of the proceeding to appear before the grand jury and tell his tale without cross-examination. And within his tale, there are so many examples of misstatements, contradictory. You remember at first, Wilson said he fired his gun once inside the car. Then some evidence came back, you know, a physical evidence came back, said there was two shots inside the car. And oh, now it's two shots. At one point in Wilson's testimony, he said, Mike Brown had reached across and had complete control of my firearm. Three or four sentences later, he says, well, I wouldn't call it complete control. It was partial control. There's enough inconsistency in there that a first-year law student could have deconstructed this guy, could have cross-examined him to the point that you could establish easy probable cause. Another instance of how this is a kangaroo court. When you have a grand jury, generally what the prosecutor does is says, hey, I've got this suspect. I've got this evidence. And based on that, there's probable cause to indict for manslaughter or murder or whatever it might be. I've got suspect, evidence, and a charge. But that's not what happened in this grand jury. In this grand jury, the prosecutor came up to the grand jury in essence and said, oh, well, gee, someone was killed. Here's a bunch of evidence and here's the cop. He'll tell you his story. Wow. That's just stunning. Understand here. Let's go back for a second. There was already probable cause to get rid of McCulloch. We already told you about his dad being killed by a black man as a cop. Also, let's add to the fact that in 20 years working as a prosecutor, Bob McCulloch has never charged a cop in a shooting. And that includes a case where two unarmed men were killed after being shot 20 times. And in the last election, McCulloch, trying to get reelected, there was some racially charged stuff going on in those elections too. So he's already got no credibility with the very community he is charged with protecting and prosecuting Darren Wilson for assaulting and killing. Typically, a grand jury lasts about a day, maybe a few hours. There's a famous saying that said a prosecutor could get an indictment on a ham sandwich if he wanted to. It's typical. Grand juries are sometimes criticized by defense attorneys as a rubber stamp for the prosecutor. But in this case, well, no, I guess it was a rubber stamp. It was the rubber stamp of the thin blue line that the prosecutors and the cops are all in it together to protect each other. That's what comes across. And when McCulloch announced this, he went out of his way to indict everything except Darren Wilson. He indicted the mainstream media. Oh, gee, the mainstream media asked all these questions. They're insatiable. The 24-hour news cycle is just terrible.
He indicted Twitter. He indicted the social media for continuing to pry and ask questions. And I believe he did that because, not because he thought it was upsetting and made it hard for him to make a case to prosecute Darren Wilson, but because it shone a light on this racist institution that was bound to let Darren Wilson walk. I mean, think about this. You got a case of a cop killing an unarmed teenager in cold, just right there in the street, letting his body sit for 4.5 hours. A case that has ignited a national firestorm. And the governor didn't think that deserved a special prosecutor. McCulloch didn't think he should recuse himself. And he thought the best way to handle this would not be to have, you know, experts involved, but to allow 12 citizens who have absolutely no schooling on how to cross-examine a witness. Let those 12 citizens decide. He's such a pussy, he couldn't even stick up for what he wanted to do in the case. He punted it to the grand jury so that he could escape any political ramifications from it. I'm telling you, the indignities that black people have suffered in this country, if black folks were the terrible, awful people some folks think they are, this country would have burned down years ago. It's remarkable, the restraint from the black community. We'll talk about that and riots in the Radical Rant. Yeah, I am mobilized on this particular issue. And to see the reactions of people, oh, he was a thug. He was a thug who strong-arm robbed a convenience store and was walking in the middle of the street. And if only he'd obeyed the police officer, he'd be alive today. Well, let me tell you some stories from my youth about white kids lipping off to police officers. This one here didn't get shot. I'll be back right after this.
You're tuned into the Russ Belleville Show. The voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, the activist radio station. You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs. We've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belleville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belleville Show every weekday on 420radio.org.
At Royal Queen Seeds, we've got premium feminized cannabis seeds, including auto-flowering varieties for the medical cannabis user. We've got bulk shipments available and new CBD oil. Plus, we accept payment in Visa, MasterCard, and Bitcoin, as well as other methods. Check out our website at royalqueenseeds.com for more information. We are located in the Netherlands, and we have online grow experts ready to help you now at royalqueenseeds.com.
can't handle the truth.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
You have offended my family.
Hey, this is great, man.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
I know nothing.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
We don't need no stinking budget.
Homosexuality.
How in the century you have slurred the meaning of the words we, the people.
Be warned, this is not your mother's marijuana.
You gotta ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Time for the Rant 45 after, and we're continuing our talk about the Ferguson decision not to indict Officer Darren Wilson. And right now I want to talk about Officer Darren Wilson himself, which to me, reading his testimony, he comes off as just the latest testa-lying cop whose testimony I've ever read. If you don't know, testa-lying is this idea that the cops get on the stand and lie about what it is that happened. And I believe that is what is happening in this case from the very first thing that he talks about. In his testimony, Darren Wilson talks about approaching these two young black kids who are walking on the middle of the street. And he says that when he approached them in his cop car, he motioned to the gentleman and said, "Why don't you guys walk on the sidewalk?" Right. Here you got this cop who's approaching two black teens in an area of town that he himself, Darren Wilson himself, said was an anti-police area that we don't like, we being the police. And then he corrected himself and said, they don't like the police. But his true intention was caught. He doesn't like this neighborhood. He's going into a neighborhood he doesn't like, approaching two black kids, walking in the middle of the street, pulls up to him and he says, "Hey, why don't you walk on the sidewalk?" Like a suggestion. That made every bullshit detector in my head scream red. Especially compared to Dorian Johnson's account. Now, Dorian Johnson is the friend who was along with Michael Brown. Dorian Johnson said that Darren Wilson said, "Get the fuck on the sidewalk." Which of those do you think is probably closer to the truth? Yeah, that's what I think too. I think "get the fuck on the sidewalk" is more likely. Now, everything that happens from that point on, and this is where a lot of the people, the Darren Wilson supporters and all those types, will jump on, "Well, he's a kid, he's a brute, he's 6'4 and 290 pounds, and he just pushed and robbed a store owner, and he's disrespectful to a cop, he's mouthing off to him, and then he punches him and attacks him, and blah, 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 blah." Now, we'll deconstruct the rest of that in a second. But let me just tell you from my own personal experience. I've been in cop cars. I've been arrested. I've been arrested in Idaho. I've been arrested in Utah. Back when I was a young man in Idaho, I drank a lot. And I was in a rock and roll band. And I hung out with some people that were kind of, you know, fun-loving types, let's say. I remember one time, we had a party at my house. Me and the guitar player and the singer, all white. And two girls, white girls. And we were all in the house. I believe us guys were all shirtless. I believe the girls were wearing bras. We were all wearing pants at the time. Playing our music really loud. I don't even remember what we were doing, but we were drunk and having a good time. Turns out that time was 3 a.m. And the cops were called. Two cops showed up, a female cop and a male cop. Female cop asks who's in charge of the house. I say it's me. I go outside to talk to the female cop. Meanwhile, the male cop goes inside my house and starts talking to the folks in the house. After I get done with the female cop, I go back into the house and I say to the male cop, "Hey, what are you doing just walking in my house like this? You can't do that without a warrant." Kind of lippy, huh? His response was, "Are you questioning my authority?" And my response was, well, yes, I am. And that's when he turned me around and put cuffs on me. But I wasn't slammed to the ground. I didn't have a knee in my back. I wasn't considered a dangerous suspect in any way. And when I eventually went to court for this, it was a, you know, disturbing the peace charge. I think I got like a fine and a, you know, warning or some shit. And I've got other friends, other white friends I grew up with who were gotten in much more trouble than I ever did. Not one of them ever had an encounter with a cop that went even slightly bad. And a few of them had encounters with cops where, had they been black, they'd have been arrested, cuffed, and stuffed. But because they were white, they got warnings. So this happens all the time, folks. So I'm much more likely to believe that Officer Wilson said, get the fuck on the sidewalk. Now, from that point on, the testimony of Dorian Johnson says that that the cop, Darren Wilson, backed his truck up. He had a Tahoe. Backed it up real quick. Kind of an SUV thing, right? Backed it up real quick. So close that the door was close to the two of them. Tried to open the door. The door bounced off their bodies. And then the claim from Dorian is that Mike Brown and Darren Wilson, that Darren Wilson was reaching out the car to grab Mike Brown, and that Mike Brown was pushing away and trying to get away. And there's all sorts of inconsistencies in the story. Like, okay, so Mike Brown is supposed to be reaching into the car across Darren Wilson's body to be able to get at the gun that's in the right side holster, and supposedly punching Darren Wilson and handing off his cigarillos to Dorian Johnson at the same time, and somehow had the power of Hulk Hogan to hold him down while doing so and punching him in the face so hard that Darren Wilson feared for his life, that one more punch might knock him out or worse, kill him. Well, folks, I have trouble believing that too. Because one of the things that happened is that after Darren Wilson was involved in all of this, he was allowed to go back to the precinct house and wash his face and put his own gun in the evidence bag, washed his hands and face all the way up to his elbows so we can't tell if there's any gunpowder residue or whose blood was where. And supposedly this black kid was so powerful he feared for his life, and yet that picture right there on the screen is Darren Wilson after being punched so hard he feared for his life. And strangely enough, on his right cheek, was it right cheek? Yeah, the right cheek, where it looked like, hell, it looked like rosacea. It didn't look like a punch. So somehow Darren Wilson was punched in the right cheek and had Mike going after his gun on the right side, reaching through the window of a tall SUV to do so. Yeah. Sure. Now, the account from that point on, Darren Wilson talks about how he felt like he was holding on to Hulk Hogan. He was a 5-year-old holding on to Hulk Hogan. Well, folks, while Mike Brown was 6'4", 290, Darren Wilson is 6'4", 215. Now, I understand a 75-pound weight difference can make a lot of difference in power and such. But a 6'4", 215 man is not a 5-year-old. And what this really gets into, too, is after Mike Brown is shot from the inside of the car and is grazed, apparently, he moves away from the car, according to testimony. And then, according to Wilson, he gets out of the car. Now, what I don't understand, if I had just been punched in the face so hard by someone that they seemed to me to be Hulk Hogan, I am not going to go after that person without backup. I don't understand. Now, according to Wilson's testimony, he said, well, if I could get outside and I could keep them there for the next 20, 30 seconds, more backup would have arrived. I don't understand getting out of the car in the first place. You've got a clear description of these suspects, the suspect you claim assaulted you. The suspect you claim assaulted you has no weapon on him. What was the... And he said, well, I had to stop him because who knows what he would have done to the next cop or the next person he would... As if Mike Brown was some sort of marauding Hulk completely out of control. Oh, and by the way, a quick little reminder. You remember the Rodney King incident? Remember the Rodney King incident? Remember how the cops then called him a Tasmanian devil and a demon? And how this cop had now said he looked like a demon, like a Hulk. He grunted. He tried to bulk himself up to run through bullets. Folks, this is something called the magical Negro theory. You ever heard of this? This is where white people, and this has been proven, by the way, this has been shown in studies, that white people attribute magical superhuman characteristics to black people. They can somehow run through bullets. And they're bulking themselves up. Things that a typical prosecuting attorney would say, hey, doesn't your adrenaline kick up once you've been shot? Regardless, I don't understand why Darren Wilson gets out of that car unless he intends to kill Mike Brown. He's got a car. He can follow these guys in his car. If they skip off through a yard or an alley or a sidewalk somewhere, he can direct back up where to go find them. But if he was so terrified of the great Negro Hulk, what the hell is he doing getting out of the car to confront the great Negro Hulk? Now, I had someone in one of my chat lines that said, well, what? Someone assaults you and you're a cop, and if they walk away, you're supposed to just let him go? He's a cop. He's supposed to enforce the law. Yeah, sure, I understand that. But let's say you're a single cop all by yourself and you come across a meth lab run by a biker gang and there's seven Harleys out front and you have pretty good knowledge that there's at least seven bikers inside armed to the teeth. Do you go rushing in like some Hollywood movie to take them all out by yourself, super cop? Or do you call and wait for backup? If the situation was as frightening to Darren Wilson as he claims it to be, then the only reason for him to get out of the car at that point is to kill. Not to solve, not to stop crime, not to, you know, keep the community safe. It was to kill. Now, someone in the chat room is saying, well, whatever happened to tasers? Well, they asked him about that. They asked Darren Wilson about tasers. They said, why don't you carry a taser? He said, well, I can't carry a taser. There's just no room for it on my belt. It's really uncomfortable. Really uncomfortable. You know what's really uncomfortable? Is having your child shot and laying in the middle of the street for 4.5 hours before anyone does anything about it. And for all the people out there that are saying, well, if Michael Brown had just obeyed police orders, this wouldn't have happened. I would turn to them and say, hey, if Darren Wilson had been polite to black people, this might not have happened either. Get the fuck on the sidewalk. Now, look, I'm not so Pollyanna here as to think that Mike Brown was some sort of saint. I think we should avoid trying to sanctify him as well. But still, nothing that happened that day deserved to be dismissed without a trial. Now, you could have made the case that Mike Brown was a criminal and was menacing and had attacked the cop. I would have loved to have seen that case. Let's bring that to trial. We'll talk more about this in hour 2. We'll take your calls as well. But for now, until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
you're giant, you own it, you're strong, yeah. You take a scene, you manage it.